Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, can people live on even after they've died?
This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Hey, if you have a real ghost story, we want to hear it. If you want to call it in, the number is 855-853-4802. If you'd like to write it in, go to realghoststoriesonline.com. Do that there. You could also become a premium subscriber of the show. No commercials. You get advanced episodes. You get access to the archive. You can sign up today through Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free. You could also sign up through patreon.com/realghoststories or at ghostpodcast.com. I'm Carol Hughes, and Kathy Gordon's here today.
Well, I am. Hey, I heard that you did a really interesting grave talks. Coming
did.
Up.
I wonder who told you that.
What was that about?
Who told you that?
Well, you just told me today that you had a really good grave talks. And I was like thinking, what was it about?
Yeah,
exactly?
So it's really interesting. I came across a book called Deliverance at Spring Hill Plantation.
Spring Hill Plantation.
So I reached out to the author and I'm like, hey, I would like to talk to you about this book. Because it's really interesting. So it's a couple, Eric and Cindy. And what's interesting is that they lived in one house and had some real extreme activity. They moved into a trailer, a double wide. They bought some land, lived there for 20 years. No real activity at all. Bought this Spring Hill plantation and had like demonic activity. It was like so freaky. And so the first place they lived, like the little girl, she was three. They have one daughter and she came in night after night like, Mom, Dad, the three men are looking at me again.
Oh, dear.
That freaks me out. But he was saying that. So, you know, they said she was a really sharp little girl and she wasn't prone to lying or making things up. And it's one thing for it to happen one night, but night after night after night. So he bought a CD player to put in her room and put hymns, religious type of music on it for her at night. So they bought the CD player and plug it in, put her to bed. They go to bed. She comes in. The three men are looking at her again. So they get up and take her back to bed. He realizes the music's off. And plugs it back in, goes back to bed. She stays in bed. Then a little bit later, they're in their room, and she comes in, and same thing, the three men are looking at me. And he's like, did you turn off the music? And she said, no. And they went in, unplugged again. So then she's sleeping with them. He plugs the music back in, and it happened a third time. And he said that third time that he went in and it was unplugged, he's like, because I said, you know, you have to pull a plug out of the wall. It doesn't just fall out.
Right.
And he said, oh, and not only was it was pulled out and like tossed the other direction. It was like somebody pulled the plug out and tossed the cord going the other way. So it was completely pulled out. So they were having experiences like that in that house.
Ooh.
So then they moved to the plantation house. And so, you know, you think a house like that is going to come with, and they're both in antiques. And in fact, he thought that he had brought something in with an antique that he had bought. He had bought an old Bible. They're both totally into antiquing. He'd bought an old Bible at an antique store and he got in the car to leave and he sees the guy running. Like he had forgotten something. So he's like, what the heck? You know, did he forget his wallet or something? So he comes running out and he goes, I thought you might like to have this. And he says, why would you give this to me? I mean, you're in business to sell things. And the guy says, well, it's a religious thing and I thought you'd like to have it. It was some kind of religious sculpture. And he brought it home and his wife hated it. And he said, that's when all the activity started.
And so the guy was just trying to get rid of it? It was like a hot potato.
It kind of makes me think that, yeah. So then when they moved into the plantation house, things were really dark there. But, you know, you think about what had happened there, they had several slave quarters. It was, I can't remember how many acres he said they had, like 28, but probably back in the day, it could have been hundreds of acres. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like a antebellum style home. It's very old and it's very nice. Like they've fixed it up very nicely. But mm-hmm. he said one night his wife would, they had cats and they had a barn. There was a doctor who had originally built the house, or he had expanded the house. And this was around Civil War time. And they had a little house out back that they called the hospital. So when patients would come, he would see them in that building. So his wife would feed the cats outside in the barn, and he was sitting there outside. It was a really nice night. She goes to the barn, and he's sitting there playing on his phone, and he looks over, and there's a man standing there. And he said, it was so real. So he looks over, and he locks eyes with this guy. And he's like, what's that guy doing in the barn with my wife? Who is he? And about that time, the guy, he said, it was just like he just slowly kind of like vaporized almost.
Like just disappeared.
Yeah,
just in front dissolved of him. Yeah. In front of him.
And then they had all this crazy activity in that house. Like all kinds of crazy things were happening. And one day he came home and he saw that man again. In his Weird. Wife's office, middle of the day. So it's like 3:30 in the afternoon. Her office was in one of the bedrooms upstairs. And he looked up, he pulled up in the house and looked up, and that man was standing there.
Oh, no.
Looking outside. And same thing. He's locking eyes with him. And then the man folds his arms. And then really? He just slowly disappeared in front of him again.
Interesting.
And I said, it's so weird that it's like, and both those sightings were connected with his wife. Like, the man is standing right there with his wife. And I'm like, the two things you would prize more than anything in this world would be your wife and your daughter. I mean, those are the two most important things. And it's right. almost as if this guy's like taunting you, like, look, I can get to your wife.
Well, and I think that the arms folding is kind of a taunting.
That's what I thought.
You know, because when you fold your arms and kind of look at, give somebody that little tilt of your head and you fold your arms and lean back a little bit. It's like you think you have the upper hand, mm-hmm. right? You know something. You're on to something. And I that's just some crazy body language for a ghost.
And I think the activity had been going on about 5 years until that day was when it kind of all just hit the, he was like, he had a panic attack. And he said, I don't know if it was a panic attack or if something kind of possessed him, but he couldn't breathe. And all this weird stuff started, you know, happening.
Mm-hmm.
And and that night he went outside and he said, he goes, I just lost it. And he was like, I need an answer. And he's like, God, why are you doing this to me? And then he had a word. He never did say the word, but it made him think of a church. He reached out to a friend who went to that church. He and his wife ended up going to that church, and he told this woman, you know, he goes, does anybody at your church have experience with demonic entities? Because I think we're dealing with them at my house. And she said, yes.
Oh.
And they sent a bunch of people to the house, and they did this cleansing. And so it's really an interesting, fascinating story. It's kind of, that's why deliverance is, the Spring Hill Plantation, because mm-hmm. through all of that, he kind of got that. And it was just really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And so it was a pretty good read.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's really good. Okay. And
so if you're looking for a good book out there, yeah, you know, to.
Yeah, it's very, it, like at the end, it's a very faith-based book, like as far as, you know, what they needed to combat that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for me, like, he's definitely a man of faith. I think this even brought him closer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think he always had considered himself Christian, but they had kind of quit going to church and stuff. They'd had some bad experience at churches. And
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, in a way, it was interesting. I said, you know, it's like, had you not gone through that, you know, his relationship with his wife had gotten real rocky, and now they have a very strong relationship. I'm like, it's like you went through this together and you made it and mm-hmm. came out of it stronger. Yeah. So it was really interesting to talk to someone like him and his wife who are very much believers, and yet they have, you know, I'm like, how hard was it to write this book to open up about, you know, demonic entities in your house and people thinking mm-hmm. you're crazy? He said, oh my God, it was really hard. But he mm-hmm. actually started writing it more as a journal. That yeah, he actually, and he said he had a voice in his head. He calls it God. And he said it was God had told him to write it down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he did. And then after he wrote it down, he was like, this is like a book. And then they yeah. decided to publish it. He said there are hundreds of stories in there that wow. happened that are not in there.
Wow.
It was just, like,
okay, we'll be watching for that Grave Talks.
In fact,
it'll be like over three episodes.
Yeah,
though.
It's already out. You can go to the Grave Talks and just search for Deliverance at Spring Hill Plantation.
Awesome.
But on that page, I can't think of it right now off the top of my head. They have a website, so you could order the book directly through them if you wanted to. Because a lot of times if you order the book directly through them, they get more of a cut than if you go through Amazon. Because Amazon gets a cut. Everybody gets a cut. But if you go direct, they said they'd mm-hmm. sign them and everything.
Oh, nice.
Super nice couple, though. It was a super nice couple, but it was like, holy shit, that stuff really happens. It's like these people live through that.
Yeah. No, I totally believe that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Oh, my gosh. I just can't imagine looking up and seeing that guy.
I know, the second time. And he goes, and in the book, he refers to him as the 1800s gentleman. And when I interviewed him, because I thought that was kind of funny, he called him that. But he said, I don't know why I've always called him the 1800s gentleman, because I don't feel like he was a gentleman at all. But they are living in the house still.
Okay.
And they
calm down.
Right now, they're not having any issues. Now, they said, I think it was a year or so after the church members came in, they had problems again. They came back and they helped him out again. And they haven't had any problems since.
Good.
It's all in who you know, right? Because I'm
that's
like,
right.
Like I told him, I said, I think it's interesting that there's so many churches. And I would think 90% of those churches wouldn't have a clue what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look at the churches that are on TV and they've got the big bands and they're like floating in from the back balcony. Yeah,
those guys don't strike me as, you know.
You know, can you go to Joel Osteen or whatever his name is? Could you say, hey, Joel, I think I've got some demonic entity at my house. Is Joel Osteen
gonna
help you?
Well, we could probably round somebody up for, you know, $15,000, $20,000.
Yeah. So I thought it was really, really an interesting conversation. I always love it when I find people like that who have these amazing stories that are just regular people.
Yeah.
So here is our first story of the day. And it says, okay, so I would like to share a couple of stories. It seems to me that our loved ones do continue to live on even through transition. The first one is my mother, who passed away a couple of weeks ago. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. That's hard. And I've been having a lot of trouble with her death. She died of respiratory failure. Now, she had been sick for quite a while. She had multiple hemorrhagic, I think I said that right, hemorrhagic? Yeah. She had multiple hemorrhagic strokes about 11 years ago and had fought to come out of it. When she had them, she had been put into a coma, and we thought that was the end, but it wasn't. The doctor even said that she would be a vegetable, but she turned out to prove him wrong. She did have to live in a nursing home because we couldn't do everything she needed here at home. It broke my heart every time I had to go to see her there because I wanted to bring her home, but there was no way to. I'm disabled and I live in a very small home. I'm really having trouble with it. Flash forward 2 weeks. I'm sitting at dialysis and I decided to listen to your podcast on iHeartRadio. I pull up the app and it suddenly shows me the Police, the old music group. My mother was very much in love with Sting, and I think if she had married my father, she would have wanted to marry Sting.
Most of us. Yeah. I was like, who didn't want to marry Sting?
Anyway, it just pulled up the group. I didn't do anything to pull it up. Then as I'm reeling from that, I suddenly get an alert that I have pictures to remember. And I'm like, okay. So I pull up the pictures, and the pictures were all of her smiling at me. It made me feel really good, but really sad at the same time. I think it was her way of letting me know everything would be okay and she's still watching over me. 100% with her on that. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. She goes to pull up this podcast and ends up the police. Like, where'd they come from?
Mm-hmm.
It's her mom saying, hey, I'm here.
Oh, that's right.
Gets me in the heart. I have another story. I'm not sure if it would be just as poignant. But my grandmother and I were very good friends. She was basically the person I could go to for advice or a shoulder to cry on. We went to the funeral of my grandmother in Ohio and we stayed at a hotel. That night I had a dream of my grandmother and all of her life's successes. It was my family, her saving the children from Romania during the Nazi regime, and her getting her husband back by pleading with the president at the time to get him out of the Iron Curtain, and several other things. My God, she was a force.
Mm.
That's incredible. Like, there should be a movie about her.
Right.
Those are the most important at this point. I told my mother about the dream, and it seemed to help her feel better. I think that was the point of the dream that my grandmother gave me, because she wouldn't allow us to be upset any time. When she would call us, she had to have us laugh before she would let us go. And I think that was her way of telling me, you had better laugh. Don't cry. I don't want tears at my funeral. The last story is about my grandfather. He was sick and had a brain tumor that was inoperable. My father went to visit him. We lived in Florida, and my grandparents lived in Ohio. I was playing in our guest room, and I suddenly turned to my mother and said, Papa's died. Not 5 seconds later, my father calls and tells us that Pop died. I don't know what you would consider that, but I have never been able to forget Mary. See, I like those moments right there. We had a story just last week about a woman whose mother came to her like at 2:30 in the morning. And then she found out the next day her mom had died at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
And then this, like, all of a sudden, just out of the blue. I mean, they knew that he had a brain tumor and was inoperable, but she said that, and immediately her dad calls and tells him that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think dreams are really important, those visitation dreams. So I find it interesting, because we talked about that in the episode like last week or whenever it was, about how there's so many people who have had these type of experiences that it makes you think that when somebody dies, there is a connection for a little bit of time. I think some people, it's a longer amount of time.
You know, I've always given it like there's a good, you know, maybe 3 days, 5 tops. That's what I've always said. When somebody that, you know, I know has died that I've been close to, and they will make a presence some way, shape, or form, you know, I'll have the peripheral vision of somebody walking past me, you know, and then nobody's there, or I'll hear voices talking, or, you know, have a dream, maybe, you know, kind of thing. And then it feels like it kind of, you know, settles down.
But I think it depends on the person. I think you could have an experience a year later. I think.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm not saying that it's gone forever. But, you know, the intense right afterwards, you know, there, it seems to settle a little bit. And yes, you can definitely have them, you know.
Yeah. I just think it's interesting that so many people have had experiences like that. And Mary, I am so sorry to hear about your mom. Like, that is so impossibly hard. And just breaks my heart. So one day at a time.
Yeah.
So we have another caller. Here you go.
Hi. I have actually 2 stories. One's about a Ouija board, and one is about our house that we lived in 2 years ago. So we thought this house was haunted. We had lots of experiences there. One time my son was in his bedroom. My husband was using the restroom. My husband heard somebody run down the hallway real quick and loud. And so he finally, you know, finished in the restroom, came out, went into my son's room and saw him just playing Xbox or whatever he was doing. And he said, "Hey, did you need a snack?" And my son looked at him and was like, "No." And so my husband, you know, continued to walk through the hallway and look down, and there was a huge footprint of a boot in the carpet. He sent me a picture of it, and I came home and we were talking about it. We measured everybody's foot, everybody's shoes. This boot footprint was huge. So then more things kept happening. My husband and I were watching TV downstairs, and behind the couch we had our son's little walker. And this is our youngest son, his walker. And the boys were asleep. And on the walker, there was this little wheel that you had to manually turn, and it kind of like cranked and made a toy noise. So we're just sitting there watching a movie, and all of a sudden we hear this like cranking noise, like the wheel is turning, and you had to turn it by yourself. There was no button to push. And I was like, "Did you hear that?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "What was that?" And we looked, and it was the walker. Something had turned the wheel on the walker. So there was that. The Ouija board story is me, my sister, and my cousins were on the Ouija board. We all had our hands on it. We were trying to contact Elvis Presley for some reason. We all have our hands on there, talking to it. Nothing's moving at the time. We're in the pitch black dark. My sister actually started screaming bloody murder. So we hurried up and turned the light on, and we're like, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And she had two pinch marks on her neck, like something had pinched her really bad. And none of us would have done that. And clearly we were all scared and wondering what the heck she was crying about. So we believe that we got in contact with something mean, not Elvis Presley. But that's my story.
I was going to say that they did not contact Elvis. I can't see him pinching somebody's neck.
Well, I don't think so. Yeah, they might have drummed up somebody, but I don't think it was Elvis.
I think that's so strange that, like, with something like a Ouija board, you could have, like, that could happen to somebody. Once again,
no, I hear those stories about people getting a scratch or something, you know, when they're on the Ouija board. I've heard those.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I hope those girls said goodbye, put that away, and then got rid of it.
I bet that was the last time they used that Ouija board.
Because I wouldn't have used it again after that. Hell no.
And I don't know what to think about the footprint.
I don't either.
The whoever started the little mechanical thing on the walker, yeah, that was something poltergeisty. You know, I get that feeling. But the footprint, I just don't know what to think of that.
I mean, without seeing it, it's hard to tell what it looked like exactly. But could something else have caused it and it looked like a footprint? Was somebody like moving the ironing board? And I don't know. Not that the ironing board would make that, but you know what I mean? Some other thing that
I'm thinking he heard something go down the hall.
Yeah.
So why didn't it leave a series of footprints?
Yeah.
Why just one?
But it definitely is creepy.
It's creepy. There's something creepy there. And it's weird. Like, why wouldn't it have done? I always think it's weird that, like, do ghosts have mass? Would they leave pressure like that, you know, on something?
But
it doesn't seem like they would. But then again, you know, if things move, they obviously can move things.
That guy, Cindy and Eric, today, they were telling me one of the stories in that house. They woke up in the middle of the night, and they said it was the loudest racket, like someone was cooking in the kitchen and getting out every pot and pan and clanging them together. And it was like, what the hell? To the point he grabbed his gun to go to, oh my God. Just as I said that, I heard this knock, knock, knock.
Oh, dear.
But I think it was my cat trying to look out the window. Oh. I don't know how she made that, but it made me jump. Anyways.
You know, I had that happen, too, where I was, you know, living down in Texas and, you know, just got up to go to the kitchen in the middle of the day. And the kitchen door was always open. This was a very old house. It had a door into the kitchen. And it was closed. And my heart just stopped because I was the only one there. I was the only one that lived in that house. Nobody else had, you know. And I knew something was really wrong. Just looking at it. And when I opened the door, every cabinet door was open. And every drawer was pulled out. And there was a box that had been sitting of some things on the dryer, the washer and dryer were in the kitchen, and it had been placed in the middle of the floor. Okay. Now, once again, it's like, okay, they can apparently move things, you know, things can open, things can do things like that. So I'm always, you know. I can, you know, so I guess they could have some sort of pressure point.
Well, you know, because if you can bang open closets and bang mm-hmm. pots and pans, you can leave a footprint.
Yeah.
And just one footprint would make as much sense as 10.
Yeah.
Because.
But mine always, the thing that always got me about mine was it was stealth silent.
Yeah.
Like I didn't hear one thing. And it wasn't that far from me. It was, you know, the door to the kitchen was maybe, I don't know, 15 feet away, you know, and I stood up. I'd been watching a football game, stood up and went, how did all this happen? You know, and I did not hear one thing.
I think one would be as creepy as the other, hearing it or not hearing
it. Or not like, hearing it. Just that opening that door and it was all just. Like, it was the weirdest thing. I was like, oh, my God.
But I think something is going on in her house. I don't know
yeah,
what,
I think so.
But something's going on there. Well, if you have a real ghost story, why not share it? Call it in at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. And remember, you can become a premium subscriber. You get advanced episodes, access to the entire archive, no commercials. Sign up today through Apple Podcasts. You could also sign up through patreon.com/realghoststories or go to ghostpodcast.com. And for all of us here at Real Ghost Stories Online, thanks for listening.